This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, Mike Bloomberg is in, Kamala Harris is out. Spotlight on the Democratic road to the White House in 2020. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Impeachment hearings into U.S. President Donald Trump have overshadowed news about the Democratic presidential candidates, most of whom have been on the campaign trail for nearly a year. Notwithstanding specific policy differences on health care, education, or the economy among the diverse field of candidates, the Democratic Party's overarching goal is to nominate a candidate who can defeat President Donald Trump, whose domestic policies, they say, have hurt the poor and middle class, and whose foreign policies have weakened America's credibility around the world. The first nominating contests are less than 2 months away in Iowa and New Hampshire in early February. So, with the once promising California Senator Kamala Harris having exited the race, who among the remaining candidates will benefit from her supporters? Might she be a contender for the vice presidential slot? Do Democrats want to take a chance on the likes of Senators Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who have put forward sweeping visions for how they would counteract economic policies that have favored the wealthy? Or will Democrats select a moderate centrist candidate who they see as more electable, such as former Vice President Joe Biden, who has strong support among African Americans, a key component of the Democratic electorate in delegate-rich states? Or might they take a chance on Pete Buttigieg, the 37-year-old multilingual mayor of South Bend, Indiana, a Harvard graduate, Rhodes Scholar, and war veteran whose eloquence in the debates and maturity on the campaign trail have captured the imagination of a swath of Democrats? Joining us to gauge the state of the race are our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is the director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. That's a Washington-based think tank. And Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way, a think tank also here in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So, John Fortier, what's your reaction to Senator Kamala Harris's sudden withdrawal? Were you surprised at the timing? She even qualified for the debate coming up next week.
Well, I'm not surprised in a sense, and that Kamala Harris really has been flagging. Her candidacy has fallen on hard times. She was, I think, a very promising candidate early on. I think the theory was that here's an African-American candidate, former attorney general, now senator from California. If she were able to really bring that California vote, which brings a lot of progressives, but also really attract the African-American vote, that would be a very attractive coalition. And early on in the summer, in one of the earlier debates, she made a pointed jab at Joe Biden related to busing, which highlighted that she had been part of this movement to integrate schools. And there was a little bit of a boost for her, but really it's been all downhill since then. She really hasn't had traction. She's not winning the African-American vote by any means. Joe Biden has a strong hold on that. And she really never found a real message that she could claw onto. So people with high expectations who fall, I think, are likely people to drop out, and that's what's happened here.
Do you see it that way, Jim Kessler? And how do you think it's going to shake up the race?
So I was surprised that she dropped out when she did, and I was kind of saddened by it because this was the first person who dropped out of the race that, at least at one point, really did seem to have a real shot. She brings diversity to the race. She is a very able person, very skilled person, and a new voice within the Democratic Party. But John is right. She made a lot of mistakes. There have been several major news stories written in the last 2 months about the rifts within her campaign that not only showed that her campaign wasn't working well, but they were actually at war with each other, and they were doing it in the newspaper. And when that's happening, you're really, really in trouble. She is on the short list now for everybody for vice president. There's no doubt about that. Her exit from the race, I think, helps two of the front-running candidates. I think it helps Elizabeth Warren because Kamala Harris's vote, such as it is, was a lot of African-American college-educated women, and Elizabeth Warren does pretty well with college-educated women. And then Joe Biden is the other person that it helps. Biden is doing very well with the African-American vote. That is really his bread and butter. That is the key to him winning. And now he has one less African-American candidate in the race that he's going to have to compete for that vote.
Some have left, like Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke from Texas, Montana Governor Steve Bullock. He's a moderate. But just as this large field is shrinking, new entrants are appearing. John Fortier, talk about New York former Mayor Mike Bloomberg and former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick. What's behind their late entry, in your view?
Right, there are two new entrants, and I just want to underscore how difficult it is to get in late in the race here. It's tough enough to run for president and do all the things you need to do to be successful, but to come in this late, this close to the primaries, and with the need for raising money, it's very, very difficult. Deval Patrick was a very impressive governor of Massachusetts. In some ways, people say almost not a clone, but similar to Barack Obama in many ways, close to Barack Obama, an interesting figure. I think it's going to be very difficult for him to get any traction. Three factors, really, you need to get in late. One, you need some name recognition. Two, you need some resources, hopefully maybe your own resources, money. And ultimately, you also need some constituency that will be with you. Mike Bloomberg certainly has the resources. He is a billionaire, 10 times more than Donald Trump and Tom Steyer. He's worth $50 billion or so and is putting his money in the race. Is he well known? He's a little well known. He has a news organization named after him. I think everybody has struggles to get to the name recognition that they need. But I don't really see the constituency that he's appealing to. Yes, he's sort of a moderate. He might appeal well to sort of moderate suburban people in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. But, Joe Biden has a pretty good hold on that vote. So I think he's moved some in the polls by spending a lot of money to get out there and remind people of who he is and to get on the map. But it is unclear whether he really has a great constituency that's going to ride with him the whole way.
Jim Kessler, some say that Mike Bloomberg has a constituency, but it's more of a general election constituency. What's your take on his late entry and that of Deval Patrick?
Let me start with Deval. Look, if Deval had gotten in the race a year ago, he would be a top-tier candidate on the debate stage. People would be talking about him. He would be in the running. He's very, very good. But he got in very late. So America has a very unique system in which we nominate people. We do it state by state, and it goes in a certain order. And I was recently in New Hampshire, which is the first primary state after Iowa, which is a caucus state. And that's neighboring to Massachusetts, where Deval Patrick was governor. I can tell you up there, there was no real warmth for Deval Patrick. And if he doesn't score in New Hampshire, and it doesn't look like he will, his candidacy is going to disappear. Mike Bloomberg, he's trying to do something that others have tried but have never succeeded in doing, which is skip the first four states, that's Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina, hope that it's muddled enough that there's room for a new candidate that no one has yet voted for, and then spend a ton of money on Super Tuesday, where almost a third of the delegates are chosen, and kind of catch lightning in a bottle there.
And skip the debates, or at least many of the early debates.
Yep. He will not be on the debate stage. He's not trying to be on the debate stage. So Rudy Giuliani kind of tried to do this in the Republican primary. He failed miserably. He didn't win a single delegate. What Bloomberg has is a lot of money and some name recognition. Does he have a chance? Yes. Is it slim? Very slim.
Back to you, John Fortier. Let's take a look at this rather unique nominating process that we have here in the United States, state by state. Where is the Democratic race headed, in your view, now, as we approach the Iowa caucuses on February 3rd and then the New Hampshire primary right after that on the 11th? Who are the front runners, in your view?
Well, I think the very early states, the first four states, are always important, but they could be particularly important this year. Joe Biden has been the front runner the whole race, and people have doubted him, and there's some reasons to doubt whether he would keep that status, but he brings two great strengths to the table. One, he has the support of the African-American community. It's not clear that that would last, but as I mentioned, Kamala Harris and other African-American candidates have not really taken that away from him. He typically polls about 60% of the African-American vote in polling, and African-Americans make up a quarter of the primary voters in the Democratic primaries, and especially in the South and places where it's even more. He also has the support of kind of white, older, moderate Democrats, which is, not the majority of the party, but a good chunk that other people are going to have a hard time taking it away from him. The second strength he has is that some of the progressive vote is split. It was especially split between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. There was a time where Bernie Sanders, after his heart attack, maybe it looked like he was going to fade. He's kind of come back. But if somehow there were just one of them, if one of them dropped out, there's a good chance that the progressive vote would look bigger and would put Biden in some trouble. And now Pete Buttigieg also taking some of that. So he's managed to keep those strengths. Maybe he won't. But looking at those first four contests, if he goes in and does well, I think he brings all of his strengths to the table on Super Tuesday, where many southern states, many African Americans will be voting. He'll do very well. If he falters badly in those early states, then there's the opportunity for some of these other candidates, really the other three being Warren, Sanders, and Buttigieg, to find a way into the race. And so I think we're going to watch those early contests more closely than we ever have.
Interesting. So your take, Jim Kessler, on the front runners as we approach the Iowa caucuses in New Hampshire. And of course, I think we need to mention that notwithstanding the many strengths of Joe Biden, he is not doing as well as perhaps he would like in Iowa. He was recently on a no malarkey bus tour because he does better one-on-one than on the, you know, rally stage. How do you assess his situation and that of the other front runners?
So I think Joe Biden is underappreciated. He's sort of the Rodney Dangerfield of front runners. He gets no respect. And he's actually, I think, been a pretty resilient front runner right now. But he's trying to do something in this primary, which no successful Democrat has really done before since 1972 and George McGovern, which is, can you win the nomination without winning Iowa and New Hampshire when they are contested primaries? And he is not going to win either Iowa or New Hampshire, because if you look at the coalition of people who make up the Biden vote, 60% of people who, when polled, say, I'm with Joe Biden, they're non-whites. Well, New Hampshire and Iowa are 95% white. So they're basically white, college-educated primaries, and his base is African-Americans, some Latinos, and frankly, non-college-educated whites. So he needs to do well enough in Iowa and New Hampshire. He doesn't need to win there, in my view. I don't think he even needs to finish second there, but probably a third place finish in those states. Then move to the more diverse states like Nevada and South Carolina, where he should clean up. And if that happens, he's probably going to win this thing. So he's a front runner for a reason. He could stumble in Iowa and New Hampshire because those electorates are not tailor-made for Joe Biden, but he doesn't have to win there. He just has to do okay there.
Well, it's interesting that former Secretary of State John Kerry recently endorsed Joe Biden for president.
Right. And, you know, from Elizabeth Warren's home state of Massachusetts.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. We're analyzing the Democratic presidential field for 2020. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a big shout out to a loyal listener and ham radio operator from Tamil Nadu, India, S. Shanmuga Sundaram. Thanks so much for writing in. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion about the 2020 race. So back to you, John Fortier. Let's talk a little bit about the so-called left wing of the party, the prospects for Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. How do you think they're going to fare at the end of the day, since the Democrats really need to defeat Donald Trump, and some consider them, you know, too far to the left, that they may not appeal to a broader electorate in the general election?
Both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are doing quite well. They're not the front runners. Joe Biden has been clearly the front runner, but they both have been getting a substantial fraction of the vote. Most of the candidates are getting almost nothing, and they don't have the exact same voter base, but broadly speaking, they're progressives, and the second choice of both Warren and Sanders supporters are each other. So if one were to drop out or one were to really falter, you'd suspect that the other would get the support. Elizabeth Warren seemed to have a breakout moment a month ago. She was rising in the polls. Bernie Sanders had a heart attack. He seemed to be failing. He will be a 79-year-old president coming in if he's elected. But things have reversed a bit. Bernie Sanders has recovered, and Elizabeth Warren's rise has stopped. She still, again, gets a substantial fraction of the vote. I think Jim's absolutely right about how he talks about Biden not having to win in Iowa and New Hampshire. I'm not sure third is a great place to finish, but also it could be a muddled field. It could be that Elizabeth Warren wins in Iowa and Bernie Sanders wins in New Hampshire. That's also good for Joe Biden if there's no other person that emerges. I do think right now we have a progressive vote that is split, and that is one of the things that is really helping Joe Biden.
So you have your finger on the pulse of the Democratic Party, Jim Kessler. How do they see, you know, Sanders and Warren? I mean, Sanders isn't really even a registered Democrat. He's an independent. He caucuses with the Democrats. Of course, they're not going to badmouth in any way these two qualified candidates. But how are they seen in this particular juncture where we are, where the Democrats feel the need to really field a strong candidate to combat President Trump, and that they, either one of them, might not capture the independents and moderates in the general election?
Right. So in the last couple of months, we've seen a few interesting things happen in this race. You had the rise of Elizabeth Warren to the point where she was co-frontrunner with Joe Biden, and she has fallen by about 10 points in the months of October and November and going into December. And there's a three-word reason for it. It's Medicare for All. She endorsed Bernie Sanders' plan, but then she put more details to it, how she was going to pay for it and how she was going to implement it, and it was a lead balloon. Another economist said it was a unicorn paid by unicorns, and it was generally panned. And what's happened is we've seen her support drop quite a bit. Where did it go? It went to Pete Buttigieg, interestingly. And Pete Buttigieg is in the more moderate lane. You'd think that Buttigieg and Biden would be fighting for the same voters. They are ideologically, but Warren and Buttigieg are fighting over college-educated, upscale, fairly wealthy whites. And as her support has dropped, Buttigieg's support has increased, and now he's in that inner circle of the top four.
Right. But he just doesn't seem to have an appeal among African-American voters.
That's an understatement.
Okay. Yes. although Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders do not have great appeal among African-American voters either. Really, it is a one-person Joe Biden support with all the other support kind of split very small among the others.
That's true. But if you look at Pete's support, it is asymptotic to zero.
Yes.
And you look at Elizabeth Warren's support and Bernie Sanders' support, and there's some there.
Yeah.
So Pete, who is unknown among a lot of African-American voters, he's so new on the scene, he has a long way to go there. Look, they all do. If Joe Biden is able to win the lion's share of African-American voters throughout this campaign, he wins the primary. It is that simple, because not only are African-Americans 25% of the Democratic electorate, the way Democrats allocate delegates to the convention, which is really how you get nominated, is based on how well you do in races within particular congressional districts. And the congressional districts that award the most delegates happen to be the congressional districts that have the largest African-American population. So winning there is like winning in the bonus round. You get more points towards the nomination. So that's part of Biden's advantage.
Should that occur, will the supporters of Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, will they go?
Warren, for sure. Warren supporters will definitely go for Joe Biden. They are mainstream Democrats. I think a lot of Sanders supporters will, but not all of them. Not every Sanders supporter is going to go with Joe Biden. And there's a couple of other also-ran candidates out there, like Tulsi Gabbard and Andrew Yang, who are getting support in Democratic primaries. I wouldn't be 100% confident that those supporters go to the Democrat, no matter who it is, who wins the nomination other than those two.
Tulsi Gabbard, the congresswoman from Hawaii, who parrots Russian talking points and may even be receiving Russian funds. That's a topic for another day. Nonetheless, let's go back to you, John Fortier, and talk about how the Republicans are going to paint and have been painting the Democrats, all of them, notwithstanding where they are on this so-called ideological spectrum. The GOP wants to make the far-left candidates the face of the Democratic Party, the Elizabeth Warrens, the Bernie Sanders, calling Democrats socialist, which is a misnomer, except maybe for perhaps Bernie Sanders. It's like a disinformation campaign. But I think they're using this as a way to tarnish the Democrats, painting them with a broad brush. How do you see this flying? Will swing voters see through some of that? What must Democrats do to counteract this labeling?
Well, look, I think both parties are going to find a way to label the opposition as extreme, and the parties are far apart. So I think some of this is going to happen no matter who the nominee is. I think there's some debate who would be a stronger candidate. I do think Joe Biden would be the stronger of those candidates because he's more moderate. But I guess I will go a little further. I think Donald Trump will find all sorts of ways to paint Joe Biden as part of the old Democratic Party. He will say, you know, Joe Biden was for NAFTA, he was for the Iraq War, he's for immigration, he's not a social conservative. There are all sorts of things that Joe Biden, even though he comes from working class roots, will be painted that way. I still think, though, looking at the polls, there are some voters who are going to say, look, Joe Biden looks like the Democrats I remember from 30 years ago. And if that's what helps Democrats in states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, where I think most of those voters are white working class, are still going to be attracted to Donald Trump and his message. You know, that probably is the advantage. But I still think just what we've seen in the polls is that there's just a, even if it's a small number of voters who really can see Joe Biden as an older, more moderate figure from their past and are not ready to pull the lever for Donald Trump, that's probably the advantage.
All right. Well, that's assuming, you know, he does get the nomination. How do you react to that, Jim Kessler, this type of labeling of Democrats as socialist, which is really not true?
Well, Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist, so I think with Bernie Sanders, it'd be hard to shed that label.
Sure, but they're talking about Democrats writ large
sure.
as just totally left. I mean, we've heard this.
Right.
And
Elizabeth
we have a large
Warren,
pool.
She said, when she started out, said, I'm a capitalist. I'm not like Bernie Sanders. I'm a capitalist. Look, Republicans are going to try and label Democrats as socialist. They've been doing that for a long time. It won't work at all if Joe Biden is the nominee or if Amy Klobuchar is the nominee or if Pete Buttigieg is the nominee. It will work a little bit better for them if Elizabeth Warren is the nominee because she is for a government takeover of an entire industry of
healthcare
and for some other proposals that are pretty far left. And it'll work like a charm if Bernie Sanders is the nominee because he has socialist as part of what he's trying to do. So these charges depends on the candidate that it's leveled against. And I think with Biden, it doesn't work. And I agree with John. They will try and find something else to label
sure.
Joe Biden on. They will take his past record as a mainstream Democrat, and they'll try and use that against him.
All right. As we close, John Fortier, I think for the Democrats, it's not just winning the White House, but it's important to retain the House of Representatives and perhaps even the Senate to get anything done.
Well, let me start with the House. I mean, the House Democrats have a pretty good majority, and I think there's a good chance Republicans will actually pick up some seats and move in the direction of the majority, but it's an awful big hurdle. So I think they'd have to win pretty big in the presidential to win that. You know, that being said, there are 20-plus Democrats who are sitting in seats that Donald Trump won last time, and there are only a few Republicans sitting in seats that Hillary Clinton won. In the Senate, Republicans have a small majority. I think there's a good chance they keep the majority. But again, if Democrats do very well in the presidential race, there's actually a long tail of people that Republicans could lose. So I think the odds are probably we'll have divided government, no matter who is the next president.
Well, divided government may be most likely, Jim Kessler, but how serious are the Democrats taking the desire to really win the majority in the Senate?
I mean, it is a big push for Democrats. The likelihood that they keep the House is very, very high. If you look at the Senate races that are coming up, the expectation, Democrats now have 47 seats, Republicans have 53. The expectation is Democrats will end up with 49 and Republicans will end up with 51. But what it means is if Democrats get a little wind at their back, they have some good candidates, like they can get that 49 to 50 or 51. So I think you'll see a big push there. It makes all the difference in the world if Chuck Schumer is leading the Senate versus Mitch McConnell, that's for sure. But I'd say the odds of getting that 50th seat, maybe 1 in 3.
Well, gentlemen, we'll be at these microphones many times next year in the run-up to the Democratic and the Republican conventions. On that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Thanks so much, as always, for your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Kim Lewis for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.